Communicating clearly about data can be difficult, but it's also crucial if you want audiences to understand your work. Whether it's through writing or speaking, telling a compelling story about data can make it less abstract. Communicating with data is the focus of this episode of Stats and Stories, where we explore the statistics behind the stories and the stories behind the statistics. I'm Rosemary Pennington. Stats and Stories is a production of Miami University's Departments of Statistics and Media, Journalism, and Film, as well as the American Statistical Association. Joining me, as always, is regular panelist John Baylor, Emeritus Professor of Statistics at Miami University. Our guest today is Sarah Stout. Stout is an applied statistician and assistant professor of mathematics at Bucknell University with research interest in ecology and the communication of statistics. She's the author with Deborah Nolan of the book Communicating with Data, The Art of Writing for Data Science. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
You have been doing a lot of work around data communication, about writing about data. Why did communicating data become this passion of yours?
Yeah, it started sort of serendipitously in that Deb Nolan, when I was like in grad school, was thinking about teaching this class for undergrads and reached out to me about maybe helping out. And so at that point, I hadn't really thought of myself maybe as a writer, like how do I claim that title? But through working on that class and then writing the book after that, we sort of both had to grapple with like, yes, we're statisticians, but we do a lot of communicating. And at some point we have to claim that sort of title of writer as well. And so I think by starting with that process and really working through the book, maybe sort of get more into it and thinking about how I might apply it to my teaching more and how I might apply it to my own work and sort of snowballed from there.
So now I got to ask, are you a better writer now?
Maybe I think I'm a better writer now. I think more about my writing now than maybe I did. And I don't know if that helps or hurts, but I think that I pay more attention to it. And when I'm doing other things, I'm thinking more about writing. Like when I'm reading just for fun, now I'm like in my head about that a little bit. And I think that's a good thing.
No, I agree completely. Just as I really loved seeing the diversity of different types of ways that you approached ideas in writing. You know, ranging from a significance article reading to write to another significance piece, can TV make you a better stats communicator? So I'd like to just sort of explore those, maybe in reverse order, because I think the one about the TV shorts, you know, these sort of small episodes as being this model, can you give a reason why kind of you were inspired to connect to what was going on in these small episodic television shows and what that might teach us about writing?
Yeah, I think for me, I was writing a lot of talks and I was thinking about like zooming out, like how am I writing this talk? Because you give a talk for lots of different audiences, and like the job talk is maybe a little bit more formal, but more recently I've been doing more talks for broader audiences and I had to mix up my approach. And I think it's also just the 20-minute versus like the 40-minute versus like the 5-minute talk, like all of those things take different structures. And I was trying to think about that. But at the same time, it was like right after deep pandemic and I had just watched a lot of TV, frankly, and rewatching a lot of like my old favorite shows, but from the beginning and really paying attention to the pilot of like how much has to actually get done in the pilot to set things up. And you don't appreciate it until you know what the story actually is, to like how much effort went into that. So I was thinking all about that and I was thinking, oh, this is sort of related to how you do the talk. Like, you know, the whole storyline, how do you set it up? You only have so many minutes to like get the point across. And so part of it was like me justifying watching so much TV. Another part of it was just like, how do you write a good talk? I think it's sort of elusive, and doing it for different audiences, different time points, like having a good sort of structure, I think, can go a long way. And that was sort of the motivation for that piece.
As you've been doing this work on sort of communicating data broadly, have you noticed like things that are particular hiccups for you, and how have you sort of worked around them?
Ooh, that's a great question. Yes, I have many hiccups. I think that sometimes, and you might see it today, like I can tend to monologue and in my head I'm like, yes, this all is gelling. But because I have all of this extra context, I forget that the connections are not necessarily being made by the audience. Right. It's sort of like the stream of consciousness makes sense for me, but not for everyone. And I think that gets back to the planning. And I think a lot of the work I've done recently is the planning of writing, because you have to take that step back. And I think we can just sort of forget to do that because we're pressed for time. We're writing that talk on the plane. You know, you just don't have that sort of zoom out, like, what am I saying moment. So I think that gets at the like planning the talk, the reading to write, just like slowing down, I think is my biggest hiccup. I'm sort of like, ooh, I got to do this. But if I take the time to like breathe and like zoom out, like, what am I saying? What is the goal? What's the best way to do this? Even starting in pictures, sometimes I just start the talks with like all of the plots or the little doodles that like tell the story. I think that has helped me a lot too, because I think I can just sort of jump in too quickly and then get in the weeds. So I've been trying to pull myself out of that.
Yeah, I recognize that same temptation. And, you know, when I've done this kind of writing, and I think a lot about how having to pull out, you know, and sort of thinking big picture. And one thing that I really struck me when I was reading one of your pieces on or reviewing some of your slides from the storyboarding talk that you did as part of this idea of process, the process of writing, is that the punchline of organize in the form of narrative. And one of the things this podcast has taught me is a lot more about thinking about the narrative that goes along with an analysis or with any kind of work that you're doing in research. So can you talk a little bit about kind of insights that you've kind of gained about structure from the idea of storyboarding?
Yeah, I think the main thing is that like when we do statistical work, we're so proud of all the stuff we did. We're like, I did this, and like I did this fancy thing. But ultimately, like, that's not what the reader cares about. They want to know what you found. So I think it's this temptation of like, you want to show what you did, but that's only ancillary to what you actually are trying to say, which is the findings. And so this gets back at the like taking a breath. It's like you have to switch gears from like doing the stuff to saying, what is the big picture? And so I think the storyboarding helps you sort of shift gears. It's like, don't talk about what plots you made, what analyses you did. What are the common themes? What did you find? How does this connect towards a bigger picture? And it also makes you sort of kill your darlings. You can't put every plot in a paper or a talk. And so you have all these things and you have to sort of whittle it down. So I think the storyboarding is both just like, it's iterative. It's really tactile. You sort of have to think, there's like no numbers involved. It's like, maybe there's some plots and you're rearranging. So I think it sort of helps you sort of shift that gear. And I do this all the time. I mean, to write a talk, to write a paper now, I'm like a very tactile writer. And so I think doing that activity with students has really helped us all sort of shift gears, write fewer reports of like, I made a histogram of this, I ran a regression, and more just like, this is skewed left, which means this, and the regression tells me this. I think helping us to get towards that sort of language is what motivated the storyboard and why I keep sort of using it.
When I was my past life, when I was a journalist, I did science and medical reporting sort of towards the end of my time, and which I loved, absolutely, but it was always a little tough to sometimes get scientists to talk to me because they were always so scared that that what their work would be misconstrued, or they were concerned. I had more than one say, I don't have it, like, you know, 5 minutes is not enough time to communicate whatever it is. And I guess, what advice would you have for, you know, statisticians or scientists or anyone who has data that they want to communicate around the fear that they're not going to have enough time to tell it clearly, or if they tell it, they're not going to do their work justice if they sort of have to sort of make it very simple or turn it into a narrative?
Yeah, I definitely feel that tension. Statisticians are so annoying because we're like,
no, it's not really that. And
yeah,
like,
John.
I can't quite say that.
And why, like, did you say that, Sarah? You just reinforced her belief.
I think it comes down to like the level of detail. It's like, maybe we don't want to talk about that one regression result in 5 minutes because there's nuance, but that regression result means something in context and you want people to know about that thing. So now I sound like a broken record, but I think it like comes down to the zoom in and out thing. Like, I think you can zoom out in 5 minutes. What's the impact of your work? Let's not try to explain necessarily the details of how you got there in that sort of form of communication, perhaps. But I think it's hard because that's not the part we get the most practice with. We're in the weeds most of the time. And so trying to navigate that is challenging. But I feel that tension too. Like sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't really want to like explain what I'm doing right here until it's perfect. But that, how are you going to get your work out there? So it's a balance, but maybe focusing on like the impact first and trying to get away from the things you feel most worried about the precision for.
What you just said really, really resonates. This idea is that what do you spend most of your time doing? What is the focus of your effort? And one of our former colleagues, Richard Campbell, was fond of saying that people are the best writers they'll ever be when they're just getting out of composition after their first year at the university, because they don't write a lot more after that. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that you become a better writer by writing, and then having some structure, I think, really kind of catalyzes that in a real, real great way. So I find that this challenge is trying to help get people out of the kind of full-in technical focus and then expanding it to think about, okay, now how do you take from the technical out to the broader community? So what are things that you've been doing to kind of help the students that you work with and the communities that you interact with to do that?
Yeah, I think one thing is just the fact that if you think about the structure of a typical assignment, it's like you do a final project, you turn it in, and then that's it, right? You don't get the chance to iterate, and that's where you start to get at the, like, what is this really saying? And so what we've done at Bucknell is sort of add in the iterative process more in the project. So we actually teach a writing intensive designated intro stat. And that means that comes along with having to do revision throughout the semester. And they get tons of feedback from peers, from the instructor. And they rewrite different parts that come together as a full report. And so they've just like spend more time noodling on it, for lack of a better word. And so I do think we still need to push more on the zooming out, what's the big picture? Because I think we spend a lot of time on the preciseness of how they're talking about the results, what does that significance level mean, that kind of thing, in that kind of class. But I think just like building in time to revise before the final deadline goes a long way. And I think it's hard because it does take a lot of feedback time in the semester, which is challenging to do quickly, especially at scale. But I think you have to show students that revision is part of the process, and to do that, they have to revise the final project. And so that means pushing back deadlines so that you have time for that. But the context part is important too. And I think I actually want to do more with that because I think I'm not doing a great job of pulling that out. I feel that tension in something like Introstat, where content seems king. But thinking about how to do that as they keep progressing as statisticians, thinking more about those conclusion sections and trying to workshop those more than the results sections, which is what we end up having to focus on, at least in that class.
You're listening to Stats and Stories, and today we're talking with Bucknell University's Sarah Stout about communicating with data. Sarah, so I'm going to sort of take this question slightly sideways. A former journalist professor, revise, yes, like we revise, those kids revise till the end of the semester. But I wonder what advice you would have for a working journalist who maybe is trying to report on data. Most of us are generalist. Many of us are not comfortable with numbers and stats. I mean, that is a stereotype that has lingered because it's sort of, there's some truth in it. So I wonder, but we want to communicate this clearly because we think it's important to our audiences. What advice, given sort of what you've been doing, would you have for journalists when it comes to reporting on stories that involve data, whether it's complicated or not?
Yeah, I think one thing is like have a buddy. Like statisticians, we're friendly. Like if you find someone that you like work well with, workshopping that way. Because I have collaborators who just help me write better in general. And I think journalists can have that too. And I would love to see more cross-pollination with that because, yeah, like statisticians want to be able to write for broader audiences better too. So that seems like a win-win. I think there's some common statistical things that everybody is fussy about, and doing a little reading up on that. I mean, you have a lot of, I'm not saying do more work because I know journalists are busy and doing important things, but maybe like, you know, a little community that talks about some of those big ticket items, like, you know, how to report on a p-value, how to report on a confidence interval. It's dry, but that's the stuff that gets you. But maybe doing it in a more community setting, and maybe, I said, getting a group of statisticians and journalists together to do that, because as teachers, we face that too. It's like, how many ways can I explain this? It's still confusing. So it's good for us all to practice, I think. But I don't have any magic solutions there. I'm sorry. You never know, I guess. Yeah.
So long before we started the podcast, I team taught a class with a journalist, with Richard Campbell. This was quite a while ago. And it was interesting to me to think about the style of writing was so different that he was talking about than what I was thinking about and that I had done professionally. You know, there was a sharpness and focus to what he would bring to writing that I found myself being surprised by. I mean, not in a bad way, but just it was just such a different style. And I was realizing there was these multiple epiphanies for me about kind of this idea of how often in my own writing I wasn't getting to the point as quickly as I could have. And I wasn't kind of, I was spending so much time on the talking about process, but maybe not getting to the punchline with the kind of emphasis that it really deserved. So I mean, I think that the exposure that for me as a statistician in working with journalism colleagues has helped me become a much better writer and a communicator because of trying to think about, well, gosh, if I try to do what they're doing, what does that mean in terms of how I produce a product, how do I a written or oral product? So it sounds like you've learned a lot in going through these processes, but also these examples that you found, whether it was from pilots, from a television show, or from other models. I know that you're sort of thinking that a question will eventually emerge. And
I'm wondering.
You're always wondering. That's always the problem here. So I would like, though, to get back to this idea of the pacing and timing of a story as it sort of parallels a Big Bang Theory episode. You know, so I love this idea of thinking of these parallels between early on introducing kind of characters and introducing context, and then kind of introducing some conflict and some resolution to conflict and some punchline at the very end. So could you just kind of give us a talk through of the parallels between kind of, you know, starting out where the characters meet and what does that mean in terms of statistics, and then going through the rest, please?
Yeah. So if you're giving like a talk about your own work, you know everything, but literally people don't come in with any context and they have to like care about it by the end of your talk because you want them to follow up because you're not going to tell them everything. Same with the pilot. It's like you have this like 20-minute period to hook them and have them come back, and you have to set up everything. They don't know anything about the characters, the setting, like what's the show going to be about. So you have to cover a lot of ground. And if you think about how you want to present your work, people have to understand why you're doing the work, because that's part of the way of getting them there. Why is your work hard? Like, why is it a big deal that you're doing the work? And sort of connecting it to what other people might be doing. So it's sort of like, actually in the first talk that people hear from you, it doesn't even matter how you're doing the thing. They just need to know why you're doing the thing and what makes it interesting or hard that it's worth doing. Because they'll follow up and read the paper after that if they care. Same with the pilot. They'll keep watching the show once they're sort of brought in. So I think you have to think about it in terms of stripping it way back to when you started the project, right? Like, why? Why did you pick it as an interesting problem? Who brought you the context? If you're a statistician who's working in applied field, you also have the challenge of talking about the context of the work. So like, I work in ecology. If I'm presenting at a stats conference, there's some baseline ecology I also have to cover in that talk, right? So you can imagine, like, okay, maybe ecology terms are like the characters. You got to learn what they're about. You have to learn what the major conflict is. There's an ecological conflict, like, why do I care from that point of view? But then there's a statistical conflict of, like, why is this a stats problem that's hard? And sort of going from there. But I've described all that, and you have like 20 minutes.
No, that helps a lot. I mean, and the idea of the images ties back to kind of some of your storyboarding. I love the idea of thinking about putting all of your plots on, you know, on some display and sort of moving them around and maybe connecting them in terms of the story that you want to tell and Xing out the ones that aren't effective. When I taught visualization or other kinds of data practicum classes, I would often say you'll make more than 10 times more the number of figures you'll ever include in some report that you issue, just because you're trying to find the right way to tell the story. And ultimately, for me, I often found that if I could generate the figure that spoke to me, I could write the text that would describe it to others. So do you find any kind of relevance and importance of kind of, for you, doing the visualizations as part of input and inspiration for the text that you would produce?
Yeah, and actually I've been doing a lot of, first not even on the computer, but like sketching, like what is the graph I want that will show me what I need? Or what do I expect this to look like if what I'm thinking about is true? And then trying to make that graph. Because I think sometimes when I'm just making graphs on the fly, I'm making ones that are easy for me to like code, but are not necessarily the right graphs. And so I've been doing a lot of that sort of like doodling for like, and I think that has helped. And especially like if you're thinking about like the right conceptual diagram for explaining your work, that is also something that like I need to draw first because I'm not great at the like shapes on the Google Slides or whatever. But I think that has really helped me solidify on the story. Because sometimes if I'm just looking at a bunch of, you know, scatter plots, histograms, it's hard to like really see what's going on. So thinking about the maybe less traditional visualization that would like really consolidate everything. And then trying to think about like, is this a plot I can actually make?
So you've been doing this work for a while now. You've done work around how to present and the storyboarding, and you have the book. What's sort of next for you when it comes to stats communication? Like, what do you want to be working on next?
Yeah, I think for me, I'm thinking a lot of like creative writing that's related to stats and data. So thinking about either data or statistics concepts as constraint for something, like maybe like, could you write a poem that's constrained in a way that's informed by data? Or could you write short stories or speculative fiction that have these sort of like data-y concepts? I think there's all this like sci-fi now that has to do with, you know, climate change or the rise of machine learning and like the ethics of those things. I think that we could also write more stats-focused fiction, not just for the sake of writing them, but I could see them being useful teaching tools. I think I'm personally just trying to break this sort of false binary of like you're a quantitative person or you're like a creative type. And so I'm really interested in trying to fuse those and like, can we do more artsy things with data? So that's what I'm thinking a lot about. I don't know if that's necessarily going to end up my professional take on communication, but I'm really trying to do that for myself. I think when I started down this road, again, I didn't really claim the ownership of the title writer. And now that I feel like I can say that, I feel like the next hurdle is like, are you a creative writer? Like, can I write more than just nonfiction? So we'll see where that goes.
Well, thank you so much for being here today, Sarah. That's all the time we have for this episode. It's been great talking with you.
Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Stats and Stories is a partnership between Miami University's Departments of Statistics and Media, Journalism, and Film, and the American Statistical Association. You can follow us on Twitter at Stats and Stories, Apple Podcasts, or other places where you find podcasts. If you'd like to share your thoughts on the program, send your email to statsandstories@miamioh.edu. Or check us out at statsandstories.net, and be sure to listen for future editions of Stats and Stories, where we discuss the statistics behind the stories and the stories behind the statistics.